You're the perfect hunting machine. Fearless. Relentless. You've been searching for one thing your whole life. And she's down there.
Make sure this is the right one.
It's her.
Good. Kill her.
Who are you?
I'm here to help you.
It can be difficult for people from underdeveloped worlds to hear that their planet is not the only inhabited planet.
Your Majesty, Kane was the best soldier I ever went into battle with.
If she's what you say she is, we're not getting off this planet without a fight.
Your Earth is a very small part of a very large industry.
I feel I have you at somewhat of a disadvantage.
Is that because he kidnapped me?
Some lives will always matter more than others.
Jupiter!
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Damien Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamien.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamien. We are also now a proud member of Geek Fives Nation. You can find them at gbnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio. With me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yo, how are you doing? I don't know how Cara Delevingne keeps getting wrong.
I hear you.
She was average in this movie.
Are you mistaking her for Eddie Redmayne?
No, more of my bit is that I was confusing.
Don't explain the joke.
I got it.
I did
just making sure.
Yeah, we.
I didn't know how obscure Valeri.
Oh yeah. It's the only space movie that Cara Delevingne is in, as far as I know.
And Dane DeHaan.
I never got him. Like, what was the fascination with him?
I don't know. Right? I don't know, guys. Oh. But this, I feel like we shouldn't spend that much time on Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets because we didn't watch that fucking movie. Save all this conversation for that episode, which hopefully never comes, based on this movie. But we did watch a movie. But before we got into that movie, what did you guys watch this week?
I watched a weird mixture of things. I watched a lot of Bar Rescue on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
It made me wonder, like, do you think that there's ever a podcast rescue? Do you think that would be a thing?
Where John Taffer comes in, I'm shutting it down.
You need to take responsibility for this show. Shut it all down.
Oh, man. He'd probably have a field day with this episode.
Oh, yeah. Like, I would imagine, like, this guy can't talk. This guy's doing bits out of left field. Who runs this thing?
You got no notes?
Yeah, it would definitely be something to behold. And then there would be the side camera where Ant is just kind of like, I believe in this podcast, and I put my heart and soul into this, and I'm not ready to give it up. And because I was trying to, like, who would be a good host for that kind of show? And I was thinking of other, famous podcasts like Mark Maron or like Joe Rogan or somebody. It's like, I wouldn't want Joe Rogan to try to fix my podcast. That would just be awful. Like, oh, what you guys need is more venison and elk meat. I don't need that. And I really don't know what Mark Maron is all about. I don't really listen to his show. But I would just want John Taffer to come in and just shut us down. Really give us some hard love, like call us assholes. I don't know if you guys watched that show, but he's very mean to people, kind of like for no reason.
Yeah, like, he'll call people it, like in hotels or in the hospital.
one of your many stints in the hospital. Yeah, he calls people like idiots. It's kind of rough.
I wonder, he doesn't have a comparison show, but I've always been fascinated by the difference between American Gordon Ramsay and British Gordon Ramsay in terms of his TV shows. Yeah, he does Kitchen Nightmares here, and that's the idiot sandwich and all that stuff, where he puts the two pieces of bread on the girl's ears.
Right.
So that's all American. But when he's on the British show, it's like much more helpful and calm.
Well, those are his people.
it's such a weird thing. I'm wondering if, you know, you always wonder how much of that is played up. You know, it's a little bit turned to 11 for people.
It's gotta be.
Having that direct comparison from Gordon Ramsay is just fascinating to me, is that he's like two completely different people on the same type of show in two different countries.
So basically what I'm saying is, John Taffer, if you're listening, come rescue our podcast. We'll do anything. We'll change anything you want. And then, kind of like a palate cleanser, I watched all three Austin Power movies on Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. But to me, they don't really hold up. They're very, very much a product of their time.
I don't think I've seen any of them in 15 years.
Yeah, I would think the only one that may is the first one.
The first one is by far the best one.
Yeah, because that was before it became a thing.
Yeah.
And Myers does what Myers does. You know?
It just became catchphrase of the movie, essentially.
Yeah.
Like every 2 seconds, yeah, baby, and do I make you horny, and like all that other stuff. And then there was other pop culture references in there. Like they throw in a Heineken reference. Yeah, like, remember, hey, get your hands off my Heine. Remember that grand?
Yeah, that's a great joke.
Oh, yeah.
Was that a gold member?
No, that was in The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, you know, to be fair, who is the Austin, who's the love interest in that? Heather Graham, I believe.
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad at all. They got those right.
Sure.
Yeah, they got Elizabeth Hurley, Heather Graham, and Beyonce. So, like, that's nothing to just shake a hat at, you know?
A slight off tangent, but did you see that the Elon Musk rocket ship looked exactly like the Dick and Balls rocket ship?
Well, that was what was funny.
That's Jeff Bezos.
Oh, Jeff Bezos, sorry.
Yeah, and that's kind of what made me laugh today, because that was they had that whole thing where they would just have different names for a penis, essentially. Like, oh, look, it's got such a huge shaft. Oh, and like, oh, like, that's a big Woody Harrelson.
That's my favorite one. Woody Harrelson.
Well, I've seen bigger.
That's just a little prick.
Yeah, a little prick. Right. Our good friend Clint Howard's in that.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's
friend of the podcast, Clint Howard. We should get him on the show.
That would be great to have Clint Howard on here. So then he could like rag on us and be like, yeah, you know, we deserved it. Sure.
Go watch the Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, for Halloween. Yeah. That'd be perfect.
Of the level of celebrities that we made jokes about on this podcast, he might be the most attainable to get on here.
Sure. But to be fair, and again, I would love to interview anybody. It'd be awesome to interview Clint Howard.
Yeah.
But that was it for me.
Okay. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, so I actually watched a couple things. Did Loki happen between our episodes or no?
The last episode. What happened?
Loki was last week.
Last Wednesday, so before.
Yeah.
So I watched that. That was really good. That might be my best favorite series that they put out on Disney Plus. Just the way it tied everything together and set up a second season is pretty wild for those shows. And, you know, I heard somebody basically just thank you to Sylvie for the next 4 years of movies because of what happens in that episode. And the other things I've watched was, with the Olympics coming up and my background in journalism from college, I watched the Netflix documentary Athlete A, which is all about the Larry Nassar case. It's a really good documentary for anybody that follows Olympic level gymnastics or anything, or has followed this case at all. It's really well done, and it makes you kind of angry and question supporting that stuff over the years as you go through and watch it and find out how much of an evil organization U.S. gymnastics actually is, or maybe was at the time. So I recommend for anybody that watches that. And then I listened to, as a tangent, a ESPN 30 for 30 podcast from last year on the Carollis themselves, who were the preeminent names in, you know, women's gymnastics since the like late 70s. But Both of them are great for anybody that's interested in that. I am a huge Olympics nerd, so, you know, this stuff, it kind of piques my interest. So that's the stuff I watch.
Okay. As for me, didn't watch much. I watched the final film in the Fear Street trilogy, 1666, which was good. Nice wrap up of the story. Kind of went on for a little bit too long. Could have been a little bit shorter, as will become a theme this week. But that was really it. I watched some of Hot Rod, which is a pretty good, this is stupid, I've seen it before, I'm going to turn off my brain kind of movie. And then I watched I Think You Should Leave season 2 again, because that show's amazing. Really can't recommend it to people because it's wild and it's ridiculous. But yeah, that's what I watched this week. I watched a whole bunch of stupid things that just put my mind at ease.
Sometimes you need that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely came in handy, but that's about it. So that's all we watched this week before getting into this week's movie. So we're going to take a quick break and you guys are going to listen to some ads so we can pay those bills, and we'll be right back. And welcome back. Now it's time to get into this week's movie, and this week was Mark's pick. Mark, why don't you tell us what movie you made us watch?
Okay, hold on 1 second. I got to open up my notes app on my phone. I would like to formally apologize to the two people co-host on the They Call This a Movie podcast for my choice in movies this week. It was a reckless choice and a one that was taken up quickly. And I do apologize and hope that you can forgive me in the future.
Oh, well, we'll see.
So I think this week I chose Jupiter Ascending. I will admit the choice process was me being a little scared at choosing my first choice, because I knew nothing about it and didn't want it to suck. And then my second choice, we decided it was a little too good.
Yeah, let's go back onto this one, because I was surprised when you almost picked this, because maybe I'm wrong. I haven't seen this movie in 20 years, but
that was the main reason I was thinking about it.
But I thought the consensus is that The Mask of Zorro is actually a pretty good movie.
I mean, it got a six. The thing that fooled me was it got a 6.8 on IMDb. So I was like, is it as good as I remember? You know,
I love that movie. I thought that was a really good movie.
I feel like a lot of people realize they're bisexual when watching that movie.
Right. Antonio Banderas, man.
Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. And people are just like, I can't choose.
Right. they definitely try to out-sex one another in that.
But yeah.
It revitalized Zorro.
Yeah. I mean, nothing really came of that. Right.
But they squandered it, but it brought it back into the main eye, like the public eye.
Yeah, I had the same feeling as Ant when I was making the choice, because my idea was, I watched this movie a lot when I was younger. It was one of the, I would say, 4 to 5 VHSs that I personally own. And so it got good rotation back when it came out. But it was like, it's a mid-90s movie. Maybe I just thought it was good because, you know, the eyes of a, you know, 10, 11-year-old or whatever, however we were when that. Maybe I just really liked because there was a hot woman in it and Catherine Zeta-Jones at that time. And that's why I watched the movie all the time, which is probably true anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the reason I was like, maybe we'll revisit it. You know, because we watched some okay movies to good movies in the past. And then Ann goes, wait, wasn't that really good? And I was like, huh. Maybe it was. And then I just kind of noticed Jupiter Ascending was, I forget where I saw it on the list. And I'm like, hey, this is on Netflix. It's always comes up in like a so good, it's bad, so bad, it's good list.
No.
let's try it. And my other choice was a random 2000s movie presented by Jackie Chan called Gen Y Cops that has Paul Rudd in it. But I had a feeling that it might have just been like, you know, we wouldn't have much to say about it. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah. That was my worry with that one.
Say I gave you an out for Mask of Zorro. I said, if you found me a good Letterboxd review, I'd let you go with it.
All of them were great.
Maybe I have to rewatch that movie. I might rewatch that movie sometime in the near future.
Yeah, but Anthony Hopkins is in it too.
Yep.
So essentially I just thought, besides Jupiter Ascending being on that list, maybe it was just such a terrible, alien design and stuff like that, that we could make fun of that. Then that's where my bit from the beginning of the show came in, because I think in my head, the alien design stuff, I was thinking of, God, I can't even.
Valerian.
Valerian. I was like, total blank. I was thinking of that movie. But I was curious from the one letterbox thing that said Eddie Redmayne's acting in this movie was just him trying to get fired each day on set. So gave me some hope, which was quickly dashed when this movie began.
Dan, where are you coming from with Jupiter Ascending?
It took me 3 tries to watch this. Started it Sunday, watched 20 minutes and said, nope, can't do it today. Tried it yesterday, got through another 25-30 minutes, and I was like, it made me sick. It made me like ill. I thought of everything to not watch this movie. I was like, oh, you know, like the roof needs new shingles. Maybe I'll just go reshingle the roof, or I'll just go like paint the whole house, or I would do anything to not watch this movie. And I have an interesting story, but it's interesting to me. But when I lived in Massachusetts for a short while, I was working in a warehouse and I was talking to these two guys that I worked with. And I asked them if they had ever seen Jupiter Ascending. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's amazing. Amazing, really? Like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's so good. Way better than Guardians of the Galaxy. That movie is terrible. I was like, okay. I gotta watch this. I watched it and I thought it was, it's one of the worst movies I think I've ever watched. one of the more competent movies that I've ever watched. That's terrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause we watch bad movies obviously, but this one like actively tries, Wachowski's and, shit, man. Like that's when I realized people from Massachusetts just have terrible taste in pretty much everything. Movies, pizza, music. It's, man, that place is just devoid of taste.
I think we got to the bottom of why Dan absolutely hates this movie. It reminds him of Massachusetts.
I was dumbfounded. When did Guardians come out? 2014? Around that time? 2015?
It was either 2013 or 2014.
Yeah, because I think this came out afterwards, right?
Yeah. So
I don't know. And these two guys also said their favorite Godzilla movie was the Matthew Broderick film.
Oh my goodness!
So this wasn't just
a hint right there.
Yeah, this wasn't a one-time hot take. So like, oh, I'll check it out. I'm interested in it. And oh boy, this movie is a chore.
Yeah.
It's an absolute chore.
I love that this is the high budget version of Love on a Leash, basically.
Right. Yeah. It's just, everything is just boring with it. You know, this is basically the Phantom Menace for 2 hours.
Yeah. I was thinking about this because it's like, what is there really any difference between this and say Star Wars? And I think what it is that now that CG has gotten to a place where you could do anything, I think we as an audience are at our limit for space operas. I don't think we want anymore, because when you can do anything, they just choose to do everything.
Yeah.
Like it's too busy.
All the set pieces, all the action set pieces are just everything. It's like, what could you do? Well, anything your mind can think of, you can do. In terms of like the 70s, when he was making Star Wars, it's like, well, I could do this with these models, and then, the restraints fuels the creativity. And I think even like the prequels, you could see it almost, between those three movies is that shift. I think Phantom Menace is more or less a little more restrained than the following two. I mean, I think the Battle for Naboo obviously is kind of showing those like, well, we could do anything, so we're going to do everything. And then the decision to make all backgrounds basically CG in that. But you do have a lightsaber battle that is more or less grounded in reality. And then as you go further, is it Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith that has the scene that never ends in like the robot factory?
I think that's Attack of the Clones.
Right. It's 20 minutes of a platforming video game.
Yeah, right? You're right. I think it takes away the creativity from the director. Right, because you could just rely on flashy set pieces or just flashy graphics. Mm-hmm. And that's why, and I think you and I tend to agree on this, Ant. We love 80s horror movies, mm-hmm. because you had to rely on practical effects. You didn't have to worry about, like, yeah, we'll CGI the monster in post.
Yeah.
Or like the actors aren't acting with tennis balls, you know. Yeah. It's the creature's there, you yeah. can touch it. There's just something like, yeah, it could look corny, but like I jumped to the Thing, where yeah. you have all those awesome practical effects and those like puppeteers and everything. You could tell it's fake, but it's still there. And I think there's something to that with these, especially Jupiter Ascending. It's just, you can pinpoint certain times when, like, yeah, that's fake, or like when it goes from real to fake, and that it takes you out of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of my main issues with it is that if you break it down, there is a very good seed of an idea for a story in a world in this, if you take it even down to just the idea that there are these people out here that seed planets to just harvest them so they can live forever, sort of idea, you know, is you know, a pretty good starting point for things. I think, and the secret princess thing is a trope in a lot of these movies. And it just, I just like Ant said, they try to show you everything about the world in this one movie. Instead of, even you take original, you know, Star Wars, you don't get you don't know everything about the lore. Like, they don't take you to, you know, each house of each of the evil characters you're gonna, you know, face and explain exactly why they're evil, you know, as they do in this movie. And it's just, yeah, the restraint on this would have been to try and think of it as more than one movie, and hold back a little bit. And you might have been able to, you know, you can make this like an 85 to 90 minute movie, you know, hold some stuff back for the second movie, and you may have been able to, you know, get at least one or two out of this, or at least two to three. But I think that's where they failed, is they were trying to show how cool and how smart they were in the Wachowski. And they just threw everything on the screen, and I was like trying to capture that magic that the lore of the Matrix gave them, you know. And you know, I think that's mainly where they failed here.
I think you're right, Mark, because I felt the same way. This could have been way better if it were two movies.
Yeah.
Not that this movie was ever going to get a sequel, but I remember thinking, right, you have that climax, like that scene where the wedding is about to take place and there's that big rescue. And in most movies, that's like the big climactic finale. In this movie, there was still 38 minutes left. And it was just like, holy shit, like, what was the point of all that? That should have been the end of the movie. And then, you know, you have to, or like maybe she's captured by Eddie Redmayne and now you got to go rescue her from there. But this was almost like this was almost an RPG. Now you have to go to each different house. It was just too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a movie that doesn't have any like backing IP to kind of draw an audience, that's such a hard ask. I mean, this movie felt super long. In the grand scheme of things, it's not that long of a movie. It's 2 hours and 8 minutes, 7 minutes, according to IMDb. So it's not that long a movie relative to other movies like this. I'm pretty sure Star Wars is about 2 hours and 7 minutes or something like that. It's around there. But this feels so much longer. This is the first time in a long time I looked at the time and I said, holy shit, there's a half hour left.
Yeah.
I audibly said that to my wife as she was walking through the room, because she wasn't watching this with me. I paused it as I was talking to her. And before I started it, I just yelled it out. Holy shit, I have another half hour. I couldn't watch this twice. Full disclosure. Every movie that we watch, I watch twice so I can write notes on the second viewing. I couldn't work up the courage to do it for a second time. Like Dan was saying, I did everything else that I could think of so I could avoid watching this movie a second time. I wrote a a stationary bike for an hour yesterday instead of watch this movie. That's that was my mindset for this. There was nothing fun with this movie. It was just, I can't even put into words just how much I did not care about this movie.
It was a whole lot of stuff going on, but none of it memorable.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself not paying attention even during the action scenes.
Yep.
Because the action scenes are really nothing special. It's Channing Tatum ice skating through the sky in every single fight. You take away those anti-gravity boots, Channing Tatum is a total loser in this movie. All he does is ice skate.
And original Star Wars, but so sorry to interrupt, Mark, is 2 hours and 1 minute long. So it's only 6 minutes shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two things that go to those action scenes in the movie. I think one, I am upset that Sean Bean lived multiple times when he could have died, which also already shows you that it's a bad movie. And number two, it just seemed like every battle you knew the end, but they took so long to get there. Mm-hmm. Like that scene where they're going through the hammers to save her at the wedding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they should have been through that by now. Like how thick is this? And the dramatic and all the dramatic stuff, you could have cut out like half of that and it would have been much better. Like, you know, the most interesting thing that happens is that, you know, when he finally gets through and they hit into the ship, and then he grabs her hand and tries to force her to, you know, get the bond on. And I'm like, that's the first interesting thing that happened at that wedding. But besides that, they were just standing there, you know, all the people were AI. So there was nothing interesting in the crowd. Right. And, you know, and the last interesting thing happens at the very end. And I'm like, why did I sit through all this? You know, it took way too long. I think with me, as you know, in this podcast, I try to be Mr. Positive anything and try to find something. There were so many times something would happen like, oh, maybe this is where it kind of turns around. Okay. No. Like when they first show those three hunters, like the girl with the pigtails and those guys, I'm like, all right, you know, they finally threw something different. You know, what's going on with these people? And then they just turned out to be lame. the three of them. And I'm just like, you know, and I to go back to the sequel thing, I did read that the Wachowski said that there was going to be a sequel, but, reports are that Mila Kunis and Channing Tatum are not returning for their roles. So I don't know what that sequel looks like. It's not direct to video, if it ever happens.
You know what? One of the problems was in the first 20 minutes of this movie, there's so much going on. There's so many different plot threads going on where it's like Mila Kunis's character is being forced to sell her eggs. There's intergalactic ownership of, they're fighting over who owns Earth. There's weird little aliens that come in, and that's when the movie lost me with the generic aliens.
Apparently they're illegal aliens, you know, the her and her mother.
Yeah, and they for some reason they knew how to dress at an egg what is that place? I guess like somewhere where you could sell eggs. Is that
fertility clinic?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the little mini aliens knew exactly how to operate everything, and so. But you have this whole imaginative concept, and you use the least imaginative alien concept. It's like what little kids draw. It's a South Park alien. Remember those?
Yeah.
Which is like the gray little gray men. Like it tries to be so imaginative, and it's boring. It's a lot of back and forth about who owns this, how they're going to go about getting the paperwork. They spend like 20 minutes or like 10 minutes in some planet trying
the
to get
the bureaucrat planet.
Yeah, like basically they're trying to get paperwork for Mila Kunis to be like the queen there, you know, like this is fun
to take her rightful title of
Earth, right? Why do we need
it was a bureaucracy joke that went on way too long.
Yeah, like why we don't need to see them standing in line getting her identification and this guy bribing the clerk to do all this. Just like she shows up, she's the queen. That's it.
It's also a scene that you could have had happen But like everything we're probably going to talk about, which is going to shock people that listen to this podcast, that they could have made shorter by just, you know, making it more of a montage than, you know, they did. They tried to make it a little bit of a montage, but they stretched some of the scenes out way too long in there. It could have been just he went to that desk and they go, no, you got to go here. And then it cut to another person. No, you got to go here. And it could have been, and then just reaction shots and could have been all done in like 2.5 minutes, you know. Yeah. Instead of the 5 or however long that whole scene was. And all it does is just lead up to a joke at the end where she goes, I'll never complain about the DMV again.
Well, it was a very important homage to Terry Gilliam's Brazil. That's what the whole scene was. Because Terry Gilliam plays the seal and signet minister. Like, anybody actually cared.
Yeah, they didn't even know that.
You know what my favorite part of this movie was?
No,
surprisingly not. My favorite part of this movie,
the bees,
and how we the audience discovers that Mila Kunis is quote unquote royalty, because bees know royalty. It's hardwired in them, guys.
They know Queen when they can smell her.
So Queen Elizabeth has never been stung in her life. None of the royals have ever been stung. What bullshit is that? You gotta tell me you can't think of a better way to, like, holy shit, she's royalty. Like, maybe she has a birthmark or something. Mm. Bees? The entire time I just kept hearing Nicolas Cage, not the bees!
A question for you guys, and I would have gotten this on 2 viewing. Do we find out how she's a queen?
Yes.
Like, as far as I remember, she's human. Like, is her dad some sort of alien?
No.
No.
Do you know, Dan, or do you want me? Because I sadly think I know this.
I'm going to take a stab.
Okay.
But since you know, you can correct me. I think she's reincarnated.
Well, I know she's supposed to have the same genetic the DNA of the mother of the three. But why?
That I don't know.
They don't explain that. It's something in their culture called the reoccurrence or something. Like, they have a name for it and it happens all throughout. Because genetics always reproduce, or whatever the stupid sister talks about. But that's the whole thing, is she's technically the mother reincarnated, and that's why she's royalty. The genes, like when they take that shot, when she's in the clinic, they put that thing, and that's how they know the other girl's not royalty. Mm. It's like whatever they do, it reads the genes as that person's genes. It's her genetic print. That's how they find it in the galaxy.
But there's no explanation of why her, the daughter of two Russian immigrants,
right,
great.
which is another point, going back to what I said about there's a seed of a story. Like, if it could have been like, you know, all this stuff happens and then she mentions it to the mother and then it's a reveal that the mother, you know, has a history, you know. Like, they could have done that, and that story would have been much better. But just her being a random reincarnation through the galaxy is just dumb. It's like 2/3 of a good story, and they just don't stick the landing with it.
Like her dad should be a living planet, basically, right?
I mean, it's anything better than what they did in this movie.
I wonder, like, this kind of is a Wachowski, like a thread almost, right? Because, like, the first Matrix is a very good movie, right? And from what I remember hearing, they weren't planning on making more than one, and it became so wildly popular, like, well, you know, we gotta keep going. But they didn't plan for more than one. So it's like all of a sudden Neo is Jesus out of nowhere, and they don't really explain why, because I don't think they knew why. So that's kind of like what's going on here. Like, they were just kind of making this story up as they were going along and forgot to put in the why.
In a bunch of cases.
Yeah.
You know.
Why is she royalty? Don't know. What purpose does this whole intergalactic, are they like a conglomerate, I guess? What is that?
But the family is probably more of a, like, I guess closer to an oligarchy, sort of like they're like, you know, a few families control all the wealth sort of thing in the galactic government.
Yeah, it's never explained, like, what they're a part of.
And my favorite thing, and I laughed when it happened, it might have been because I had the captions on, But they introduce this whole family, you know, the Abrasic family, and they say they're one of the most powerful families in the universe. Like, they couldn't even commit to them being the most powerful.
And then probably because they were going to introduce other powerful families.
Yeah, they just, they don't even talk about other families. And everybody they run into is like, oh, the Abrasics. Oh, man. You got, like if they would have been like Darth Vader, you know, and it's like, this family is like cruel and well known for being, you know, but they hedged their bets by not even making them. It's like I said, they get like 2/3 of the way there for a good thing, but then they just either get rushed or they want to design a set piece or something for action, which were terrible in this movie. But yeah, even the bees thing, it could have been an explanation that whatever planet they're from, the bees are like something to do with the royal family. You know, like,
you could just not have the bees at all.
You know, but if you had to have the bees, you just take that one more step where you explain the bees and the home planet. That's, you know, just take that step if you're going to do it.
And one more thing for me. Is this movie kind of like a low-key, like, anti-animal agriculture movie?
I think it's anti-capitalism.
Okay. It's very, very big anti-capitalism.
Because the way I took it was because they harvest humans for their anti-aging goo. And it's like, oh, and Eddie Redmayne at one point says, like, yeah, your people are essentially just resources for us. Like, oh, I wonder, like, and I think he says that they herded like cattle.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, shit, are they trying to, like, do an anti-animal agriculture movie here? Like, it's okay.
No, it's more of a rich-poor class thing.
Yeah, than I think that's more along the lines.
But they were using the terms, you know, it was more like a farm than animals, more like plants. They were treating them like plants. Like, they would seed the worlds, and then when the worlds got too out of control, they harvest. Yeah. So it was more like plants than animals.
Right, because Sean Bean keeps bees, and that's not vegan.
It's not. That's true. I had to explain that to someone yesterday at work, and it to me, that makes no sense. But
but yeah, that's essentially, like, and even that, you know, is a good nugget for a story. You know, you could have spread out over two movies. Yeah. You know, not have that reveal happen in this movie. You know, that's the great end of the second movie, when they're going to kill Eddie Redmayne's character. You know, as they find out, oh, they've been harvesting humans for centuries or millennia or whatever. And yeah, and I 100% believe that the Wachowskis were just throwing out huge numbers in this to just make things seem important. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm on my 14th millennium.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, that's going to sound big, you know, without having any like backing to, like, if she was almost 100 millennia years old, like almost 100,000 years old, you know, how long is, like, all of this been around?
I was actually impressed that Mila Kunis was able to get to, like, know the number.
Yeah.
Like, I've just celebrated my 14th millennium. You're 14,000 years old? I would not have known that.
Yeah.
I would have been like, you're 4,000 years old? I don't know what that is.
And the line that absolutely killed in the writer's room was the sister going, well, actually 14,004.
Oh, yeah. But who's counting? Am I right?
Who's counting? Yeah.
Well, you don't look a day over 12,000 years old. There's something stupid.
I was waiting for that line to come, but it didn't.
I cared so little about what I was seeing on screen that there were points where I was just staring at Mila Kunis's eyes. And, like, most of the time when she's having dramatic moments, like, her one eye was open more than the other. And I was just like, then I couldn't unsee it. That's how invested I was in this movie.
I picture it where the camera just keeps getting close-ups of both of your eyes. It's like you staring at Mila Kunis, her eyes, and back and forth. And I got a hot take.
It's a good movie.
No. That's like a nuclear take. My hot take is Channing Tatum, not great looking in this movie. I think he was very average looking.
He's a little bit soft too, looking, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's big. Not saying he's not big, but he was a little. He's not ripped like he usually is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like a 12 pack that he's usually sporting.
He spends a good, I want to say, like, 70% of the movie without a shirt on.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's you know, He's not at his best.
He's like Christian Bale in Batman Begins, sort of.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Not defined. There's no tone there.
Yeah.
It's basically just he's in good shape.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. At first, right. I thought you were going to comment about his face, and I was going to I was going to go. You do know that they're supposed to make him look like a man dog, right?
It's a little weird concept.
He's Toto in the story of Wizard of Oz, right?
Yeah. Essentially.
He's also a flying monkey at the end, I guess.
I mean, there are flying monkeys in the movie. I think Sean Bean is the Scarecrow.
Right.
It seems like it's something that they had like a good thematic element and then kind of just like kind of petered out towards the end.
Yeah.
But I think Sean Bean is supposed to be the Scarecrow because he lives on a farm near a whole bunch of corn.
You're right. But the Scarecrow never backstabs Dorothy.
Right.
Or maybe he does at one point. I don't know. I never read The Wizard of Oz.
So, Jupiter Ascending from 2015, directed by the Wachowskis, who we know, of course, from The Matrix movies, Speed Racer, Bound, Cloud Atlas, another one that I hope Mark never picks.
Oh, God.
That's 2 hours and 25 minutes long.
Put it
stars Channing Tatum, Mila Kunis, Eddie Redmayne, Sean Bean, Douglas Booth, Tuppence Middleton. What a fucking name that is. Nikki Amuka Bird, Christina Cole, Nicholas A. Newman, Maria Doyle Kennedy, and Vanessa Kirby. Has an IMDb score of 5.3 and a Rotten Tomato score of 27%. Budget, $176 million. Box office, $47 million U.S.
Man,
there hasn't been more of a waste of money than this movie than until Jeff Bezos went into space.
Way to put a timestamp on it.
I've got nothing else to say about this movie before we end the plot. What about you guys? Fuck this movie, really.
Yeah, again, just listener, you know, kind of buckle in because this, I think we're just going to be bitching and moaning for the next.
To be honest with you, I'm even going to say I'm not even going to go through the IMDb plot summary. I'm going to go through the Wikipedia plot summary because it's shorter.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, again, this movie was just this is what Mr. T was talking about in Rocky III. He just predicted pain. That's what this was. He was talking about Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, it's baffling to me. I've had such a bad time with this movie.
I wonder at what point in the production did half of these people realize that they didn't sign on for the movie they thought they were signing on for.
I like the idea of Eddie Redmayne just trying to get fired every day. Holy shit! Like, how does a good actor turn in such a terrible performance?
Yeah. They probably couldn't tell you until they saw it for the first time in full. Like, how can you tell how good a movie is when all of it's CG?
Yeah. But at the same time, like, you hear how he speaks and he sounds ridiculous. He basically just talks and whispers until he turns into Michael Shannon and I will find him. Just these random outbursts that made me laugh so hard. What was this? Like, he yells go at the lizard people or something like that. And just abrupt cut. You'd have to like, hey, don't talk that way, please. You don't sound threatening or intimidating. He sounds like he's 100 million years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good villain for sure. He's not going to show up on any of the AFI top 100 villains.
No. That I can assure you. Do you guys want to get into the plot?
Yes.
All right, Dan, what do you got for us this week?
All right. So, I'm so tired from this movie. Just going to give a quick shout out to Tia and her friend Brittany and their podcast, The Top 10 with Tia. It is a weekly podcast where Tia and Brittany go down top 10 list. So you could check them out on Instagram and Twitter. I know it's TC_Stark. And she's also the head writer for Geek Vibes Nation, with whom we are affiliated with. So drop them a follow, listen in, and enjoy yourself.
Okay, great. And we are going to take a quick break, and you guys are going to listen to some messages from friends of the podcast. And we will be right back.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan J.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoGuerroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Welcome, travelers. Seems like you're looking for a story. Well, I got one for you. It involves adventure, friendship, and all sorts of...
Hey, Earl, why don't you tell him about that time I stole that big-ass melon?
Yeah, I was going for more.
Or you could tell him about the time I kicked your ass, Earl.
I wouldn't ever tell him.
Do I need to get my ref gear on?
Okay, everyone, shut up. Now come with me as I tell you a story from afar.
Hey, everybody. My name's David. I'm the DM for From Afar Podcast. From Afar Podcast is all about four friends separated by distance, brought together by adventure. Hope you all stop by and give us a listen. Thanks.
And welcome back. Now it's time to get into the plot for Jupiter Ascending. And full disclosure, I am reading through the Wikipedia plot summary because I just don't care, to be honest with you. We open. Earth and countless other planets were established by families of transhuman and alien royalty for the purpose of harvesting the resulting organisms to produce a youth serum for the elites on other planets. That's one sentence. After the death of the matriarch of the House of Abrasix, the most powerful of the alien dynasties, her children, Balaam, Kalik, and Titus, quarrel over the inheritance, with Balin inheriting an enormous refinery on Jupiter and Titus spending his inheritance on a lavish spaceship. Jupiter Jones, go ahead.
I was going to say, to be honest, I don't think any of this was actually explained in the movie. into that much.
You got to read the novelization.
Yeah.
You got to read the other books, man. The other books are canon. The extended universe. Bullshit.
Luke for you.
Jupiter Jones narrates that her father, Maximilian, met her mother, Alexa, in St. Petersburg, Russia. After Maximilian is killed in a robbery, Alexa names their daughter Jupiter, after his favorite planet, and they move to Chicago to live with Alexa's family. Years later, Jupiter makes a modest living as a housekeeper to wealthy neighbors. Wanting to buy a telescope, Jupiter agrees to sell her egg cells and uses her friend Catherine's name as a pseudonym. Catherine's house, Jupiter and Catherine are attacked by extraterrestrial keepers. Jupiter photographs them, but they erase both of the girl's memories of the incident. Jupiter finds a strange photograph on her phone while waiting at an egg donation clinic, but cannot recall anything about it. During the procedure, the doctors and nurses are revealed to be keepers sent to kill her, but she is saved by Kane Wise, former soldier sent by Titus to bring her to him. I don't even understand what I'm reading.
Yeah, and by the way, as someone that probably paid attention a lot at the most of this group, all of that is 100% true, but maybe they wrote this after watching the movie instead of just as the movie progressed, because a lot of that is information you find out later. But anyway, I just love that the idea that they probably high-fived when they came up with the idea of Kane as the name of the human dog hybrid.
Sure.
Canine.
I get it, Mark.
I think this is around the first time when I stopped watching, the first time I stopped. I don't have the patience, or I just don't have it in me. I'm too old for this. Mm-hmm.
I found myself so many times just oh man, I haven't retained any of this.
Jupiter Ascending is a young man's game.
It's like when you're reading something, but you're distracted while you're reading, so you're just reading the same thing over and over again,
yep.
And you haven't retained any of it. You're just skipping, and you're going through the motions of flipping through the pages, and just I don't know what I read for the last page and a half.
You're trying to get context clues, essentially. Yeah.
That's what this movie is. It's reading when you're half paying attention.
Oh, yeah.
So as Kane and Jupiter flee, their spaceship is destroyed by a squad of keepers. Kane fends off the attack, kills the keepers, and hijacks one of their vehicles while protecting Jupiter. Afterwards, Kane realizes that Jupiter must be of great significance to Titus and Balaam, who are revealed to have sent the keepers to Earth to capture her. Kane keeps Jupiter to the takes Jupiter to the hideout of Stinger Apini, another former soldier living in exile on Earth.
Wait a minute. Stinger Apini?
Apini, A-P-I-N-I.
That can't be. Really?
Yeah. That's what he's, according to this, that's what his name is.
That's a great line. I'm so immature. Stinger Apini. No one said that out loud when they were rewriting this?
I guess not. Oh, and he's Stinger and he keeps bees.
Yeah. I love this movie now. I changed my mind.
When Jupiter learns that she can control the bees in Stinger's residence, she discovers that she is galactic royalty. Because who hasn't seen that plot point play out before?
Again, it's just like, throughout the history of Earth, there has been, you know, royalty, right? Mm-hmm. A bunch of different cultures had royalty. So you're going to tell me throughout mankind, the for however long we've been around, all those people have never been stung by a goddamn bee?
It'd be great if Sean Bean was like, I've only seen this once before, and it was with Prince.
Yeah, that'd be so much cooler.
But this movie takes itself far too seriously, so that couldn't have happened.
Nope.
Stinger agrees to help Jupiter, but she is captured by a group of hunters who are supposed to be working for Balaam. They have been bribed by Kalik to bring Jupiter to her palace on a distant planet. There, Kalik explains that Jupiter is genetically identical to the dead matriarch, and therefore is the Earth's rightful owner. Supported by Captain Dyomika Singh of the Intergalactic Police Force, Aegis, Kane retrieves her from Kalik and takes her to the intergalactic capital planet Oris to claim her inheritance. I don't know what any of this means.
And this is where you get the bureaucrat scene.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
In another attempt to lure Jupiter to him, Balaam sends Gregan to kidnap Jupiter's family. On the way back to Earth, Titus's henchmen capture Jupiter and detain Kane as punishment for not bringing Jupiter to him as promised. Titus reveals to Kane his plan to marry Jupiter, kill her, and claim Earth. Classic James Bond villain moment there.
Yeah.
Titus then throws Kane into the void of space and attempts to seduce Jupiter, declaring his intentions to dismantle the youth serum trade, of which Earth is the next intended source. Kane survives being spaced and returns with Stinger to save Jupiter at the altar before she gets married. Jupiter asks to return home, but learns that her family has been taken hostage by Balaam. At his refinery inside the Great Red Spot, Balaam demands Earth in exchange for Jupiter's family. Realizing that Balaam cannot harvest Earth without her permission, Jupiter refuses. Kane infiltrates the refinery and damages its gravity hull, causing the refinery to begin collapsing. While the occupants evacuate the refinery, Singh's ship moves in and rescues Jupiter's family. Jupiter survives the collapsing structures only to land at the feet of Balaam, who tries to kill her. But Jupiter fights Balaam off and spares him, but not before the structures collapse and Balaam falls to his death. Just as Jupiter is about to suffer the same fate, Kane saves her as the refinery is in its final stages of the collapse. Singh opens up a portal to Earth and prepares to evacuate, potentially leaving Kane and Jupiter behind. However, she is relieved to find that they have survived and crossed the portal along with Singh's ship. Jupiter's family has returned home with no memory of their disappearance, while Jupiter secretly retains ownership of Earth. Kane's rank in the Legion is restored, and he and Jupiter begin a relationship. That's the end of the movie.
Very nice.
That was super efficient, guys.
I applaud you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everything I was going to comment on, we did before you read that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there's the whole point. I think your most telling moment in that description, Ant, was about halfway through you went, I don't even know what I'm fucking reading. Because that's kind of what this movie felt like at times.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go, wait, what is going, like, kind of have to, you never want a movie where you have to think about the plot or the lore while you're like going, wait, why is this happening? What is that person? You know, you never want your audience to be confused.
Yeah.
About basic plot information or character information, and that's what this movie does.
Yeah, so we've done over 140 episodes. This is the first time in a long time where I felt burnt out, which is crazy because two episodes ago we had by far one of our favorite episodes in Double Down, and last week's wasn't a bad movie either with Samurai Cop. This one, it took a lot out of me. It was draining. And I was only able to watch it once. I really couldn't justify watching it a second time. Yeah. Couldn't justify watching it for, like, a total of 4 hours for this movie.
A lot of the performances are very wooden. Like Mila Kunis is a very wooden actress in this movie. Channing Tatum, he's boring. Eddie Redmayne, who I don't know what he was thinking. And again, he's a good actor. He's given Oscar-worthy performances before.
Yep.
I don't understand. I guess this is the equivalent of, I don't know, let's say like Jacob deGrom. Not, I mean, I'm not saying he's the best actor out there, but like, you know, Jacob deGrom goes out there, shuts it down, right? And maybe this was just like one bad start for Eddie Redmayne,
maybe.
You know? But holy shit, like this was so far off point. Mm-hmm. And everyone, no one else is remotely rememberable or memorable in this. You know, like Sean Bean, I didn't know Sean Bean's last name was a peony. That's the best part about this movie now.
Yeah, I really don't know what to say. Because it's competent. It's a mainstream movie, so it's not like it's a disaster on all fronts. It's just it was a chore. I hope, yeah, it was a chore to sit through. I found myself just checking out every time I was trying. I would like sit my like, all right, I gotta focus, and then like 2 minutes later, I'd just be like eyes glazed over. Not what? Retaining anything.
Was this the Wachowskis' last movie?
Good question.
Because I feel like this is the type of failure where people lose jobs over.
I feel like the Wachowskis are too big for that though at this point, right?
Well, like how long can you coast on The Matrix?
Sure. So they did Sense8 on Netflix.
Sense8.
It was a series. Okay. 14 episode series that went from 2015 to 2018.
Okay. But
since this, the only other movie they have is Matrix 4.
And that's in post-production, I guess?
Yes.
Okay.
So before this was Jupiter's, was Cloud Atlas and Speed Racer before that.
Now, I've heard a lot of people like Speed Racer.
I think it's incomprehensible in terms of the... It's an assault on the eyes.
It's a lot of neon lights, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like someone's head should have rolled for this movie, right? Because I think Mila Kunis kind of stepped back from acting a little bit. She had those Bad Mom movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen The Bad Mom Christmas, which was, you know, fine for what it is.
Yeah.
But she kind of took a step back, I think. You know, Channing Tatum went on to do other things.
Just the Cheetos commercial, whatever that was at the Super Bowl.
At the Super Bowl, yeah, with Ashton Kutcher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did she have a kid at this point in between?
No.
Is she a mom?
That's a good bet, I'd imagine.
She has two children with Ashton Kutcher.
Okay. Does Ashton Kutcher have a kid with Demi Moore, too?
Probably.
Oh, man, it's all over the place. He's
making
actors.
He's making a run at Nick Cannon.
Yeah, oh, God. He's got a lot of catching up to do. Yeah, I think this... I demand blood for this. Someone needs to suffer the way that we've suffered.
We could try and kidnap Mila Kunis, I suppose.
I think Ashton Kutcher has an app that would like detect that. Oh,
that's right.
That.
That's right. Right.
So we can't capture her. We got to capture
him.
Right. Yeah, it's useless if we have him. I was gonna say like capture Eddie Redmayne. He's much frailer.
And part of me thinks he would be down for that. Like, if he one of those things you go to kidnap, he was like, oh, no, are you going to put the handcuffs on me?
How freaky would that be?
And just make it completely awkward.
Like, hey, Eddie, are you enjoying this?
It's creeping me out. It's so much pain. Stop.
Wink.
It's my Bowser Princess Peach theory.
Oh, she enjoys being captured.
Kidnapped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if your only other option is a fat right. Italian plumber, you know, why not give the giant dinosaur a whirl?
He's probably packing. Right?
Yeah, he's thick.
It's
yeah.
probably weird looking, but still.
Spiral shaped.
Well, at least we got something creepy at the end of this episode. There we go.
I what else is there to say about the movie, really?
Nothing.
I think at one point Mila Kunis tells some character to refer to her as Jupe. there's that. That's a terrible nickname. I would refuse.
We're gonna call you Jupiter.
No, I'm not gonna do that. Yeah, it's. I would have asked, has anyone ever called you Jupe? Yeah. No.
It's how about Jay?
Stop trying to make Jupe a thing.
Right, it's not gonna be a thing. That's all I have to say about Jupiter Ascending, really. All
right. You guys want to plug your shit so we can get out of here?
Yeah, sure. At DeAquino122, that's my personal Twitter handle. I also run the Stranger Damies, our Real Play D&D Twitter, at Stranger Damies. Come check us out. New episodes air on there. Our schedule goes on there. And we, talking about all kinds of stuff, D&D, movies, comic books, just your one-stop shop.
Yeah, so the D&D podcast, you mentioned Stranger Damies, airs every other Wednesday where you get your podcast. We're still streaming over at twitch.tv/GameVaultPod. I would tune in this Friday for a very special episode where we might have some announcements and just discussing the campaign. There. So, be on the lookout for that. If you're listening to this on Thursday, when it releases, if not, go watch the archives over there on Game Vault Pod. And then over there, we also stream, 5 nights a week. So be sure to check us out. We're there on Wednesdays, Thursdays, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We're variety streamers. So all kinds of different games. So you'll definitely find something that you will have interest in. Yeah. So, and, make sure you, hit the subscribe button, on, all the Game Vault Pod stuff and, including the podcast, and then make sure on, Stranger Damies, you go and, give us a review. We've been on there a while. We might need to get some of those 5-star reviews in there to bump up a little bit.
Okay, and this is They Called This Movie. You could find us on Spreaker just by searching They Called This Movie. We're also available wherever you get your podcast just by searching They Called This Movie. We are themaindaming.com. That's our main website, and you can find us on all social apps just by searching The Main Damie. So that's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just type in The Main Damie, and we will pop right up. We are also on TikTok. Find They Called This Movie on TikTok just by going to TikTok and typing in They Called This Movie. We are a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com and on all socials and all podcast streaming apps just by searching Geek Vibes Nation. Tons of great shows if you're into geek stuff. Surely it's a show for you. If you want to get a hold of us, you want to give us an email, give us a movie to recommend us watching, you could hit us up at Gmail at themaindamie@gmail.com. You could tell us how much we suck, how much this movie is awesome, or whatever you want to do about that, and we'll have a discussion about your bad taste in movies. If you have the time, please go on any podcast streaming app and give us 5 stars. That would help us out a great deal. Give us a short review. Tell us you suck. Tell us we suck, or else. But as long as you give us that 5-star review, it doesn't really matter. That's going to wrap it up here. The directors of Jupiter Ascending are the Wachowskis. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony Lovecchio telling the Wachowskis, well, you certainly made a movie, didn't you?